Well, thank you for being here. And just to start off, can you state your name and role?
Yes. My name is Ren Fialka. I am the founder and the executive director of Spread the Love Commission.
And what's the mission of Spread the Love? How did the organization start?
So the organization started in December of 2014, essentially with an epiphany when I was traveling. And I met a man who was experiencing homelessness in San Francisco. And I'd actually started out that day going downtown to lend my voice to the Ferguson protests. And that day was a pivotal day in my life. It changed my life as I ended up having a very informative conversation with this elderly gentleman who was living on the streets. And we were surrounded by people who were protesting for human rights. And ironically, what we were watching was a bunch of people who I think really truly believed in the cause, but were very unaware of their immediate surroundings, which were a street corner where a lot of people that were experiencing homelessness actually considered their home. And it had been completely turned into an area where everybody was riled up. The police had come in. A place that was their only sanctuary was all of a sudden becoming just a lot of negative, angry energy. And a lot of the police that had come in were actually focused more on the street residents there than some of the people that were protesting or acting out in some ways that weren't really helpful to anybody. And I sat with this man for over an hour, almost 2 hours, and just spoke about life, spoke about everything, his experiences on the street and human nature in general and the protests and racism and theology and philosophy. And at the end of it, I left. I got up and I just had this really familiar melancholy, just feeling that helplessness that you feel when you've bonded with someone and you really just, you know that they're going back to something that's really unpleasant and you don't know what you're equipped to do to help them in any kind of sustainable way. And instead of just walking away with that feeling, I turned around and asked him if there was a small bag of things I could bring him the next day that would make his day-to-day easier. What would be in it? And he just lit up and laughed and said, you know, no one's ever asked me that. And then proceeded to give me the list that we use today in Spread the Love Commission of things, some things that you would common sense would say, yes, of course, anybody would need that if they were living on the streets. And a lot of things that house people would never occur to even think about what people might be missing when they don't have a home. That's how Spread the Love was born, was on that day.
What is in that list?
Well, it depends on where we are. That list has grown since the day that I'm speaking of. But things like underwear, clean, you know, new underwear and socks, long johns. Something really interesting called a P-38 can opener is quite helpful for people. Something that it's an Army surplus can opener. Hand sanitizer, it can be used not just for cleaning your hands, but it can also be used as fuel. Tuna is huge, helps to have a P-38 can opener. Hand warmers are essential, emergency blankets.
You started this nonprofit from this conversation.
Yes.
What do you say to people who might see unhoused people on the street, but then don't know how to help?
I think that's the huge, it's one of the huge elephants in the room is that sense of helplessness, which I was experiencing that day too. You know, the first thing, and it's the reason we call it Spread the Love, is the first thing that anybody needs, and I always say this, that, you know, human beings need love like plants need water. It's essential. And the first thing that anybody really truly needs is to be acknowledged. And of course, you need to recognize, just like you would with anybody else, that you're interacting with someone you've never met before, you don't know their history, you don't know anything about them. I think the stigma that people experiencing homelessness have had to face and deal with every day, people initially, you know, a housed person is usually has some kind of distrust or fear, reticence about approaching them at all. There's been studies where people that are looking at someone who is obviously experiencing homelessness, actually their brain sees them as an object instead of a person. So I think the dehumanization of homelessness has been the big problem from the beginning. The first thing that you want to do if you want to engage with somebody who's experiencing homelessness is first use your common sense that you would with anyone. See if it's, you know, check your situation out, kind of feel the vibe with them. Just even a smile, eye contact, a good morning, that's a great place to start. If it's someone you pass every day, let it bloom naturally like any other relationship. If it's somebody who's out there actually with a sign, take a minute to read the sign. Don't immediately go to whatever potential horror story you've heard from somebody else or a negative experience you've had yourself. Everyone's an individual. That population is as widely varied as any other population we have in the United States. We've now been doing this for over 9 years. And no matter what we bring out there, including tents and sleeping bags, what we get, our feedback has always been the thing that you brought out here today that was the most valuable was that you stayed with us and you heard our stories and you gave us a hug or you said hello or you respected what we had to say. You gave us time. You treated us like equals. That's the biggest gift you can give anyone. And, you know, it's not always going to be well received. People have PTSD out there. They're not treated well. Some of them are dealing with mental illness or addiction, or they just have no trust. And you can give them that too. They're allowed to feel that way. But don't make that person the poster child of every other person that you could have an interaction with. And respect their space. If they shy away or they don't, you know, maybe if you pass them the next day, give them a little bit more of a smile. Or if they really don't want to be engaged with, give them that. That's respectful.
What about in situations where you see somebody asking for money? I know a lot of people are conflicted about that. Do you give that person money?
Okay, so I love this question. I think it's, you know, I struggle with it a lot too. First of all, a lot of common sense things here. We as a society have this kind of baked in stigma with people experiencing homelessness. It's really like the last surviving prejudice for anyone who has worked through any of the other ones that they've kind of looked at in themselves. And it's a big one. We don't carry money with us when we're on outreach. What I recommend people do if they want to be helpful in the day to day and they want to offer something more than a smile or a hello is to get something like a meal card. You know, pay attention to the area you're in. What you're looking for with a meal card is you're looking for a place like a Starbucks or a Subway or a McDonald's. I know it's not always healthy, but you're not their parent and it's hot, delicious food. If it's something in that area that they could easily walk to, you're not just giving them a meal. You're also giving them access to possibly a restroom and indoors. They're a paying customer. They're able to go in. What a lot of people don't know is that, you know, the very people that need access to running water and a bathroom and all of these other things that don't have homes, they're not allowed to go into most establishments like a housed person could just walk in and out even if they didn't buy something. If you look like you're experiencing homelessness, you might not even get in the front door. So if you're giving somebody a meal card, a very easy thing to carry, $10 or $15, they can share it with one of their friends. They can have it multiple times. You're giving them access to indoors, possibly a bathroom, and food. The other thing is if you have some time, you can also just sit down with them. If you've already established a hello and you've like stood back respectfully enough, introduce yourself first. Don't expect them to give you any information until you've offered something to them. They're a lot more afraid of a housed person than we should be of most of them. And then start from there. You're making a friend, just like you would with anybody else. I'd also say really simple things that are very helpful for most people. Socks. Washed, clean, brand new pair of high-quality socks. We say anything that you do give to somebody else who's experiencing homelessness, we don't give anything to someone who's experiencing homelessness that we wouldn't give to a loved one. So we make sure everything's high quality, that it's clean, that it's, you know, has no tears and all of that. Yeah, there's some simple things. We health and hygiene kits. There's lots of different. We have some of the kits online, but you can find, they're called blessing bags. You can make some of those with your kids or your partner or just yourself, and you can carry those in your purse, just small items that you have that you can hand out.
You talked a little bit about this, but just succinctly here, how do you gain the trust of the people that you're trying to help?
Actions speak louder than words. You have to be out there for a while. I think one of the big things about surviving when you don't have the protection of a home, a roof, walls, privacy, a way to protect your things is you become a very, very observant person. And so a lot of times when I'm establishing outreach in a place that we've never been before, I most often go by myself so that I don't have to be responsible for a larger group of people and their safety. I go out by myself because I am somewhat harmless looking. And sometimes that's dangerous. But what I've found is that when you go out and you don't have another agenda except being respectful and assessing people's needs and giving things out with nothing attached to it. If you're out there, even if you're out there for half an hour, which is a short amount of time, or sometimes I'm out there for 2 hours, people start approaching and engaging. I'm not pushing myself on anyone. I'm minding my manners. I'm introducing myself first. I'm asking people what they need. I'm not assuming what they need. I'm not assuming who they are. And the leaders of the communities that are in encampments or, you know, we work mostly with unsheltered people, they will present themselves or I will be led to them. And once that trust is established, I have all of a sudden a whole new group of volunteers with me that know where all the vulnerable people are and how to introduce me. So one of the big things about Spread the Love Commission is our guiding lights are our clients. We have more client volunteers than we have volunteers, and we have quite a few volunteers. And we work right alongside them, just with a curated list also where we can find more people. They guide us to the organizations we partner with because if they give us their stamp of approval of an organization, then we know that organization has the same core values as us.
Can you talk a little bit about how this leadership emerges among the unhoused community?
The word is community. I think that I don't even know how many things a day, valuable lessons a day when I'm out doing outreach, because I really truly believe that a lot of our unhoused clients understand the meaning of community more than housed people do. It's all they've got. It's all they've got, and it could go away in an evening. There are so many programs that criminalize, so many cities and communities that criminalize homelessness. And taxpaying dollars that pay for things like sweeps, where a whole community that, you know, that's all they've got is a group of human beings that trust each other, that look after each other, that guard each other's stuff when others go to work or when somebody's sick. They need that. You have to have that protection. You don't have walls and a roof. All you have is the trust and relationship with your neighbor. And every time that goes away, you have to start all over again from scratch. Plus, you're trying to get a job, or you're trying to stay healthy, or you're trying to get off drugs, or you're trying to not ever be on drugs. All these things that we take for granted as housed people that live in neighborhoods. Our walls are walls. Their walls are the community, are the people that they trust. So the leaders are essential, and they're the ones that have created a trust among the largest group of people. So the information, if somebody new is in the area, that information gets back to these leaders. And if I don't meet the leaders right away, I'm brought to the leaders, to the elders in that community, to the people that are providing food, to the other organizations that, you know, I'm brought to the people that they trust the most. It's as basic as, it's all about building trust, showing who you are, not saying who you are.
And amongst the homeless community, though, the leaders among them emerge because they're taking care of their neighbors. And so they see, oh, this person is assuming this responsibility, this connection.
The leaders will know if there's someone who's taking advantage of the people they're looking after first, and the leaders will know if there's somebody new that's come in to provide people with protection or resources.
How has your organization changed over its 9-year history?
Well, people have started taking us seriously, which is really nice. That took a lot of work because that the question you asked about homelessness and it being here, it is here. It's just that in small towns, it looks very different. A lot of people that are experiencing homelessness, and homelessness can be living in a home, quote unquote, that is not a home. So that can mean it's, you know, 3 or 4 families or a bunch of strangers living under the same roof, including children that are not safe with some of the strangers. Also, not having running water or not having proper heat or not having proper insulation or having black mold, things that make a home not a home anymore. There's lots of that around here. As is in large cities and small communities, a lot of times the only people experiencing homelessness that people interface with are the ones that are the most obvious. So people that are maybe having a mental illness situation or people that are panhandling, and that's not always a bad thing. That's sometimes the only way anybody can make anything happen for themselves. Or, you know, a criminal incident or something like that. There are that's the tip of the iceberg, and it's a huge shame that most, like, that one negative incident is what people paint as somebody who's experiencing homelessness. There's a huge silent majority of people trying to just be safe. And in small communities, they're trying to protect their kids from the stigma of homelessness. They're trying to make sure that the potential slumlord doesn't kick them out because they are complaining about having no heat. Homelessness is everywhere, and it's just growing. It doesn't matter if you're in a mountain town or in a big city. It looks different. But the big problem is that most of us, even the ones of us who really want to help, I learn things all the time, and this is my profession at this point. We don't know enough about homelessness. We don't know enough about the population, and we don't know enough about the causes. We think we know, but we don't. And until we actually are willing to really look at this and look at this together, this problem's just going to exponentiate every year.
Are there any resources that you would point listeners to that are maybe universal or not necessarily located in one particular city? Because there's going to be listeners from all over the country.
Mm-hmm. That's something we're working on right now. And I mean, we're one of so many boots on the ground organizations that are doing our best to head into a housing first model. I mean, it depends on where you are, clearly, and I can't rattle off a list at the moment. We're hoping every year we now have, I think, 22 partnerships, both locally and nationally. And as I was mentioning before, the only partners that we have are partners that share our core values that our clients have actually given us the thumbs up to partner with. So I would definitely look for Housing First, people that are Housing First Solutions. I've got a bias towards this, but people that are actually boots on the ground that are empowering people that are experiencing homelessness, that are giving them a voice and giving them a say. I've said this a lot, especially recently. The homeless crisis in our country is a full-blown humanitarian crisis, and it's not recognized as such most of the time. And it's criminalized a lot. And so what I would really look for wherever you are representatives and organizations that have compassionate, informed, housing-first models. And that's people that are going out on the streets and helping people when the encampments are being swept. They're people that go out there and help people in the tents pack up and get their things and protect their things and get them into lockers or move them. There are people that are going into, as sweeps happen, in Salt Lake City is an example, you know, there's whole communities of people that are getting pushed so far away from resources. They're up against like the railroad tracks with a 15-mile walk to running water or a bathroom in the middle of a snowstorm. And so there's organizations that go out every week and go to them. I would say that's a big part of it. Support organizations that go to our homeless community. Go where they are. Don't expect them, you know, they don't have, sometimes they don't even have shoes that fit, let alone any transportation to get anywhere. So I would definitely look for the grassroots organizations that empower people that are experiencing homelessness and allow them to have a voice and are willing to go to them.
Is there anything else you want to add or anything else you want people to know about homelessness?
I would say this. This is a big deal. If you have created a relationship with somebody who's experiencing homelessness, don't ever make a promise you can't keep. It's just in general not good to do. But people that are experiencing homelessness have come from so many broken promises. And you know, they're expecting you to break their hearts or not show up again. So over-deliver and under-promise. I would also say, please don't ever take a picture of them or share information about them unless you have their specific permission, really clear permission. That's really important. If you've developed a relationship with somebody and trust and you feel good about giving somebody cash for something, you can do that. I'd definitely make a plan and figure out specifically what they need. I would say one of the things that people don't think about is like, yes, you know, some people are fighting off addictions and things like that. But if you openly hand cash to somebody on the streets, people that are experiencing homelessness are far more susceptible to being victims of crime than actual perpetrators. So if you hand cash to somebody and other people see it, our clients get robbed 2 or 3 times a week. They either have their things confiscated by people that are criminals, or even during the sweeps, police officers, and they never get them back. So just make sure you're not putting them in a dangerous situation, or yourself for that matter. Really look around before you approach people and make sure you know kind of the situation around you.
Very insightful. Thank you for this. Mm-hmm.
So this is, it's just, I've said multiple times that things I learn every day. One of the big things I learned was, I'll ask you this, maybe you'll know. Why do you think most women and LGBT youth and youth in general are out on the streets?
Because they don't feel safe in their home environments?
Yeah. Domestic violence. And it's out of the frying pan and into the fire. But there's no other choice. Their home isn't a home anymore. The thing that I learned that was shocking to me at first, and now I've just kind of assimilated it, is would you think that how would I say this? What I realized in talking to our clients is that a lot of people who are out there that are dealing with drug addiction, they weren't addicted until they got on the streets. This is really important. So when you're on the streets, for whatever reason, say it's domestic violence, all of a sudden you are in danger 24/7. And sleeping at night is not a good idea, especially if you're a woman. So you have to start sleeping during the day. Because it's light outside, there's more people around, you're less likely to get attacked or robbed. And you're really uncomfortable because you don't have a bed. You don't get a lot of sleep. You've probably had to fend off attackers in one way or another. You probably also are beginning to have some health problems if you didn't already have them before you left. And you don't have an ability to have a job. And you're in pain and terrified all the time. And somebody comes up to you and says, hey, do you want to just smoke a little of this? It's only $2 and it'll take the pain away. Or it'll help you. A lot of people say they start taking street drugs because it keeps them up. It'll help you stay up. Fentanyl is in so many drugs at this point, and you don't know what you're taking. But if you, and it's, they're so highly addictive, they're so hard to get off of. But you take it the first time because you have to stay up. You have no choice. You have to stay up to protect your stuff because somebody took it all. You had a bad incident the night before. And then you're addicted to drugs on top of everything else. And it takes away pain and it keeps you up. And then it also takes away your hope.
Like such a horrible cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, the people, my client volunteers who are now either housed or getting there or aren't and still have all this bandwidth to help us, they're my heroes. Like when I complain, I catch myself a lot. When I walk into a warm house at night, this is a really hard job, but it fills you full of so much, gratitude for what you have and admiration for what people are going through and the fact that so many of them still have the ability to be kind to you and to, offer the last of their things. They're some of the most generous people I know. It just gives you a perspective that just makes you humble and grateful and really kind of, you hold yourself more accountable. And then, the saddest part of all of it is this is a first world country and these problems have been created by other human beings and an insatiable need for too much, it's something I'm really deeply looking into this year, but I think that people that are experiencing homelessness and displacement, their voices are silenced all the time. And there are so many people taking advantage of that silence. So much money that's going in the wrong direction. And it's gonna take a tipping point to get it into the right direction. And it's gonna take a lot of courage and bravery. And it's gonna take the voices of the people that are being victimized by it. It's gonna be hard. It is hard. It's hard every day, but I think about what they're going through every day because they text me in the middle of the night when it's freezing. And still, they're like, thank you for loving me and checking in and, can't wait to see you again. And they give me and should give all of us, the inspiration to move forward in even just the little ways, it all matters.
When you say it's going to take a tipping point, I think a lot of people in this country feel like we are at a tipping point, that cities are overrun with this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing is really changing.
Well, that's not a tipping point then, is it? Right? I mean, this is the thing. We've gotten so used to looking at this. We've gotten used to watching this suffering right in front of our eyes. And it's deep suffering. People die every night in tents. They get bulldozed over in sweeps. They get murdered in their sleep. This is not newsworthy stuff most of the time. Because we've dehumanized this entire population of people. They are treated like pests by people who otherwise, you know, go to church, give to charities. And it's still okay to look at them like that. It's still okay not to, like, deeply investigate this or to hold on to that one time some guy screamed at you or made you feel or wasn't thankful enough for the sandwich you gave them. You know, these are people that deserve to be treated like family members because they are family members. You know how many elders are out there right now? How many grandparents that I've encountered that have literally walked away from their families, you know, because of things like they have a brain injury or something, and their families don't have enough means to look after them anymore. So the grandparent just took themselves out of the equation and is living on the streets. This is not like a one-time situation I've encountered. We have a huge emergency. It's a humanitarian crisis, and we look at it like, oh, we wish we could clean up the homeless crisis. What do you mean by that? You know, if we keep looking at it as these are people that are trash instead of people that are fellow human beings, we're not going to hit a tipping point. The tipping point is when enough of us start looking at people experiencing homelessness like relatives. So this is something that's really, really important for us all to look at a little more deeply and not have a knee-jerk reaction to. And I've learned this in all the years I've been doing this, but especially this past year, we want to be able to get in one way or another everybody in a home. But not everyone wants or is capable of being housed in the traditional sense of the word. And there are a lot of reasons for that. There are some people that we call them home free. They're fine. They're survivalists. They are enjoying being nomads. They actually, when I've encountered a lot of them, they're very helpful with other people that are living in encampments. And, you know, some of them are vets. They like living outside of the box. They're not who we concentrate on with our work. There is another group of people who, for whatever reason, be it domestic violence or PTSD from serving our country or mental illness or a combination of all of these things, and PTSD from experiencing homelessness for a long period of time, to all of a sudden assume, oh, let's just get them into this house and put them back into quote-unquote society and they'll be fine. No. You know, people, you have to meet people where they are. We have now seen, you know, there's some people that we've partnered with groups of organizations, especially in Colorado, and we're seeing them all over the country that are either tiny houses or protected encampments that are built in parking lots that have a fence around them and resources inside, in running water and, you know, community buildings and all of that. They're like those tents that they have for ice fishing. They're like really sturdy tents. They've got cots inside. Everybody has their own personal space, which is really important. And that's not the case with a lot of shelters. I think the whole shelter system needs to be reevaluated. And this is, you know, for some people, this is transitional housing, but for some people, the tiny homes or these tents, this is ideal. They have a spot. They are still outside, but they have their own privacy, their own spot. They have a community, but they don't have to be living with other people without privacy. They're being treated like adults with their own decisions, and they have a home, and that's the home they want. They want to be more outside than inside. It's what they're used to. That's meeting somebody halfway. Or the tiny home situation, that's meeting somebody halfway. Met this remarkable woman in Venice who suggested that a lot of the parking areas around her that weren't used in the evenings could be set up in the evenings with a locker system. This is an amazing idea. And she gave me permission to share this. I hope I get to, we cross paths again. And this is in Venice. And she doesn't want to live inside. She is one of the leaders in an encampment. And she said, I've been thinking about this for a long time, but what if these parking lots in the evening became places where people could set up their camps? There would be a locker where all their stuff would be safe, which is something every city needs, is a locker system for people that are experiencing homelessness. If they could go out and do their jobs during the day and know that their stuff wasn't going to get stolen at the shelter or outside or, you know, wow, what a wonderful amount of freedom that would give them to get back into their life. So have a locker system that holds just their stuff, a hammock or a cot, a tent. They're there at 8 o'clock at night when the parking lot closes for the day. They get their sleep. They're in a protected, they have a security system. They've got the bathroom system, running water, all of those things. And in the morning, they pack up. They put all their things back in the locker. They go to their jobs, go on with their day. And at the end of the day, they can come back. During the day, the city can have that as parking. And at night, it can provide people that want to live that lifestyle a safe place to do it. And, you know, there's people that traveling around want an inexpensive place to camp for the night in an urban setting that's safe. They too can camp there. And it will integrate a population of people so they get to know each other better, less stigma, affordable place for people. These are solutions that are coming from inside people's tents.
Because they know best.
Yes, they do. So that's, I think, you know, there are some really good leaders now that are coming out. But I think an essential part of that is to meet people where they are and to know, like, there's some people, sure, eventually, maybe they'll go back into a home. But you need these transitional places to allow people to get used to a different lifestyle. We can't pigeonhole human beings into ways they don't want to live. There shouldn't be any problem with having people live different lifestyles that aren't causing harm to anybody else. But we should be able to guarantee everybody safety and respect.
Lots to think about. Well, Ren, that's about time for us today. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective and your compassion. It was great speaking with you.